That's kind of creepy, actually. I don't know. I don't want my controller recognizing me. Thank you.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 315, recorded on July 1st, 2013. And welcome to the 315th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and our 148th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes listener feedback. You know, I really ought to start doing some gaming histories. I think I can... Actually, you know, with the 10-year requirements, I think I can start talking about the Xbox and the PlayStation 2 as gaming histories.
That's true. The PlayStation 2 would have been 2000, so yeah.
And the Xbox was 2001. I mean, I don't think we ever discussed the Dreamcast either.
Nope.
Or the Game.
And we're in that same era, or the GameCube for that matter.
So I guess the seventh generation is going to be the future topic of conversation. The sixth generation. I'm sorry. Seventh generation was the Xbox 360 PS3, no?
Yeah, Xbox 360, PS3 is seventh. Yeah. So yeah, sixth generation.
And the Wii is what, six and a half? I guess the Wii U is seven and a half, I think. Anyways,
the Wii U is what the seventh generation should have been for Nintendo, if they weren't, you know, hopelessly behind.
Well, let's not alienate our Nintendo listeners. So, anyways, what have you been playing, Jordan?
Well, as we talked about last week, I finished Last of Us. I went back and realized that I had not finished Walking Dead on the Xbox. So I had gotten as far as, I think, episode 3 or halfway through episode 3. So I sat down and knocked out the rest of the game in one night.
Well, you know, it's really good timing because guess what's being released this week?
400 Days is coming out this week?
Yes, it's coming out tomorrow on PSN in North America.
I thought it wasn't until
later. No, the day later on Wednesday, it's going to be on XBLA worldwide. Oh no, I'm sorry. On Tuesday, it's going to on Wednesday, it's going to be on Steam, and on the 5th, it's going to be on XBLA. So this week, yeah, the 400 Days DLC is coming out, and I'm pretty excited about that. I have the PC version on Steam, so I'll be getting the DLC.
That is exciting. I didn't think it was coming out until August, but I realize now that's the bundle that Sony is doing with the Vita. They're doing a Walking Dead plus 400 Days bundle in August.
Yeah, they actually they're heavily hyping that. And I know that your complaint right now is that the Vita is not going to get any Vita specific games anymore. It's just going to be PSN titles that are compatible with the Vita.
PSN titles and PS4 titles, and nobody's going to make any Vita games anymore because why bother? You know, make a PS4 game, you can play it on the Vita too. There's no incentive for independent development on the Vita anymore.
There is Tearaway. I mean, you have to get that.
Yeah, I'm totally getting Tearaway. I'll consider Killzone, although I'm not a Killzone fan.
Yeah, I finished my Mass Effect 3 romp again. My Mass Effect trilogy romp again. And I was satisfied with the results of what the characters did and stuff like that. I also had some more knowledge of what I should have been doing. And I actually downloaded the demo for State of Decay because I wanted to see what all the fuss is about.
Is that like a DLC for Mass Effect? I'm not aware of
State. No, State of Decay, it's the Xbox Live Arcade game, the open world zombie game that everybody's been raving about.
Oh, okay.
And it actually is pretty good, especially some of the stuff I learned. Because you not only, you know, like when you enter a building, one of the things you can do immediately is start barricading it, you know, and they said that you have to keep your fellows not only happy, but sane and not depressed or suicidal, because if their morale gets too low, they'll find a little corner and shoot themselves, you know. Oh, and according to someone I know, you'll love this scenario. Sometimes if someone gets a little bit too hysterical, the game will tell you, well, listen, you know what you have to do with this person? You have to take them out on a mission with the intent of finding a shady spot and shooting them so that they don't panic the rest of the group.
Wow.
I mean, from 30 minutes of play, I realized how deep this game was which is shocking for a game that's under 2 gigs. I mean, and the graphics are beautiful too. It's running on a proprietary engine, so a lot of people are excited that it's going to be that's probably going to be coming out. It's coming out on Steam, and I don't know when. They keep on saying it's delayed, but you know, it's sometime in 2013. But Jordan, I strongly suggest you try the demo of State of Decay.
I'm actually looking up the demo as we speak.
Yeah. So I don't know what I'm going to be playing next. I do have a Gamefly rental that I haven't touched in 6 weeks. It's the Family Guy Back to the Multiverse game. You know, I ordered a game that I was intrigued by but would never spend money on, you know. So I'll get some achievements and I'll get to see if the game really was any good or not, or you know, I mean that's the beauty of renting games. You know, you can rent a piece of crap game and not have to worry about having to play full price for it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What game did you rent?
I told you, Family Guy Back to the Multiverse.
Oh, Family Guy. Yeah.
Family Guy, yeah. Like I said, I heard a lot of bad things, but I just wanted to see what it was like. And
I'm tempted to Redbox Deadpool if I ever see it at Redbox.
Yeah, you know, they had a thing in which Deadpool was complaining about Wolverine being in the game, you know, and sort of like invoking Wolverine publicity, which I laughed at because that's sort of hypocritical, because if it isn't Wolverine having Wolverine publicity, it's Deadpool managing to invoke himself in every single Marvel comic.
Right.
You know, if it's not Wolverine, it's Deadpool. So I wonder why they don't do that with Ambush Bug in DC Comics. Although they certainly
Ambush Bug is actually in DC Comics. At the back of every New 52, they have a fake newscast, and Ambush Bug is one of their reporters.
Oh, okay. Because I know he did appear in 52. And you know, as part of the New Justice League, which is hilarious the way they used him there. But yeah, I have not been hearing good things about the New 52.
No, it's kind of a disaster. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe we'll have a DC Comics discussion afterwards. The problem with that though, is that I haven't been reading any DC Comics, although I could go on miles about how much I hate Man of Steel.
We're almost at a point right now where they've actually canceled more New 52 titles than there have been New 52 titles running. So, yeah.
I think everybody's going to blame Dan Dido or something. I don't know. Okay, so we do have game news, and this one's intriguing. Go ahead, Jordan.
Game news, PS4 did have always-on DRM camera, but Sony changed it at E3. This comes to us from Tom's Hardware. It seems Sony was going to announce the same always-on DRM scheme at E3 2013, but remained silent till the company saw all the negative feedback from Microsoft's pre-E3 confidence and changed all its specs. In an interview with Famitsu, SCE Worldwide Studios president Shuhei Yoshida admitted that the company listened to the feedback after Microsoft's conference and dropped the DRM scheme, as well as the camera that would have launched with the PS4. Sony is still undecided about the system's Japanese price and plans to have a showcase for the system at Tokyo Game Show, which will be on the 19th of September, 2013.
Yeah, so I think this is the problem with going first. I mean,
it's not necessarily a problem with going first. It's key to listen to your client base, right?
Well, and, I know, but I'm just saying, had Microsoft gone first, right? Do you think Sony would have done those cheap? And now we know why those videos are so cheap, because they must have just filmed it backstage or something like that.
I think they did. but we're talking about the how do you share a game?
Yeah,
video.
I mean all those. Yeah. So here's the thing is that I think also Sony must have been grateful that Microsoft priced theirs at $499.99, because remember all the reports that Michael Pachter may have been right. It might have been $349.99, but since if Microsoft's going to do it at $500, Sony says, well, we can up the price $50 and it'll still be less expensive.
I don't know anything about that. Your prediction was that it was going to be horribly expensive because of the DDR5 RAM, and realize.
It still is.
Yeah, that's exactly what you said, Jonah. You said that it was going to be horribly expensive because of the DDR5, and that didn't happen. So,
well, you know what? That's a perfect segue into the next news item. There's a report, Xbox One's capability is better than Microsoft expected, and this comes to us from Eurogamer. According to sources, it seems that Microsoft severely underestimated the processor performance of the Xbox One by a factor of 88%, as evidenced by the capabilities of the final hardware. Warning, tech speak commencing. Jordan, I know you know this stuff like the back of your hand, but this stuff sometimes almost goes over my head, but I was able to follow it.
Okay.
While the PlayStation 4 uses 8GB unified pool of GDDR5, the Xbox One uses DDR3, which is alleviated by the 32 megabytes of quote-unquote embedded static RAM. This means that the bandwidth is more of an issue on the Xbox One. However, Microsoft thought that the console would peak at 102 gigabytes per second as compared to the PS4's 176 gigabytes per second. But now sources say that Microsoft has revised the figure, saying 192 gigabytes per second is theoretically possible. However, practical estimates put the rate at 133 gigabytes per second with alpha transparency blending operations. Why the goof up? Well, because Microsoft took its calculations from a basic figure, 120 bytes per block multiplied by the GPU speed of 800 megahertz. What the text didn't know was that the hardware was capable of reading and writing simultaneously. Generally, the main issue is that this seems to contradict earlier rumors that the CPU of the Xbox One was being downclocked. According to sources, 800 megahertz remains the clock speed of the graphics component of the processor, and the main CPU is operating at the target 1.6 gigahertz, which keeps parity with the PS4. In essence, the machines are taking different routes to the same goal, with the PS4 having a slight edge in processor speed. Whew, that was a lot of numbers.
That was a lot of numbers.
But
so what they're talking about here is when they talk about the static RAM, right, the 32 megabytes of embedded static RAM, that's incredibly fast RAM that's basically attached directly to the CPU. So think of it as a 32 megabyte buffer for RAM. So the RAM writes to the static RAM, and then the CPU can access the static RAM more or less instantaneously.
Right. So first thing that one is, how did Microsoft not know that the hardware that they pay a lot of money? And by the way, the PS4 and the Xbox One use the same Jaguar processor by AMD. So they're exactly equal on that, which is part of the reason why developers are more pleased with the PS4, because at least they're working with the same processors. But Microsoft didn't know that the hardware could read and write simultaneously. That's strange to me.
Well, you know, the thing of it is that I think that's probably like a little tiny line item on the spec sheet that would be very easy to overlook. And so whoever did the calculation just didn't take that into account. We've seen that kind of thing before with the space program, where they crashed a ship into Mars because somebody forgot to calculate miles into kilometers or vice versa. So it does happen.
So basically, 133 gigabytes per second versus 176, but you're not including the 32 megabytes of embedded static RAM, which means we're basically going to get the same kind of... And the thing is that I sort of suspected that the Xbox One was doing a little bit more, because when I was watching the demos running off the Xbox One, the graphics were very, very, very sharp and not much different than the PS4s. Now, the other thing we have to take into account, that this is the launch, and we all know what happens at launch. Launch games tend not to be that big a leap from the previous generation. You know, like if you played Need for Speed Underground on the Xbox 360, people are saying, so what? It doesn't look much better than the Xbox Ones did. It's later in the generation in which you start getting, when people are really familiar with the hardware, that you start getting a lot of oohs and ahs.
Well, you know, some of the titles that we're looking at, like Watch Dogs, are going to be on the existing consoles as well. So it'll be interesting to see how those comparisons work out.
Oh, they're much worse, from what I understand. They're much worse. And the thing about it isn't about graphics when it comes to games like that. It's more about how much can you have going on at once.
Another case in point is Titanfall. Titanfall is apparently a 360 title as well, and I had no idea that was even happening.
It is, but it's seriously gimped as well. I mean, the one thing that you cannot underestimate, the fact that Microsoft's using a cloud for multiplayer, so you can have a lot faster updates. And by the way, that's one thing that people have to understand about the Xbox One and the PS4 using cloud, is that firmware updates are going to be a lot faster. As a matter of fact, I wonder if they're going to do the same thing they do with MMOs, in which they're updating the firmware while you're playing and you don't even notice it. Until maybe they'll have a thing that says, your firmware has been updated.
That would be nice.
Because I know you were complaining about PS3 and their PS3 firmware updates.
Freezes and you can do absolutely nothing while it's downloading something, yes.
Yeah, so We're going to move on to the next item, which is also somewhat related as well.
Report, Xbox One will be able to run Windows 8 apps, and this comes to us from Destructoid. It seems that the Xbox One will be able to run Windows 8 apps if what Microsoft VP Steve Guggenheimer is hinting at is true. According to Guggenheimer at last week's Build conference, quote, Xbox One has two engines. It's got a gaming engine, and it essentially has a Windows 8 engine, says Guggenheimer, who then showed off a simple web application running on Xbox One. Nothing to announce today, but when I talk about that common core, you're seeing that common core in action, being able to target other devices over time that run the Windows 8 engine, he stated. Will Windows 8 apps and games be freely portable on the Xbox One? While the Xbox One couldn't handle extremely resource-intensive PC games, what about indie games and gamer apps? Would this lead to cross-platform play between PC and Xbox One?
It's very interesting, you know, and Microsoft doesn't like to lift its kimono completely. It likes to save some surprises. And if you have complete compatibility between the Xbox One and the Windows 8, I wonder if the Xbox One is going to have an apps page.
It would be nice if it had an apps page. Well, don't they have an apps page right now? I mean,
Windows 8 apps page.
I see what you mean. Yeah. But you know, the other thing that it would do is it would breathe life into Windows RT. You know, so it makes sense to do that because RT can only run stuff out of the App Store. If they suddenly had another platform that was friendly to apps, it would, you know, bring back Windows RT and make it not quite as useless as it is right now.
Hmm. Well, the next item is also related. Look, we have a lot of synergy in our articles today. This one is very interesting. Xbox One getting Unity support to aid indie developers, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Despite the frustration at Microsoft's indie game publishing policies, the Xbox One is the easiest console to develop for, and now it'll become even easier and cheaper as Unity Technologies is lending its support to the next-gen console. The Unity engine has been the most popular engine used by indie developers to release their games across multiple platforms, and the Xbox One version of the game will add support for Kinect, Smart Glass, and cloud computing. If that weren't enough, games being published by Microsoft Studios will get the Unity engine licensing free. This agreement may spell the end of Microsoft demanding indie gamers have a publisher by making it more attractive for indie publishers to allow Microsoft to publish their games to get free engine licensing. Microsoft earlier removed the monetary requirements for additional patches to games, and that's something we have to discuss as well because
absolutely, yeah. You know,
Unity will also be waiving its $1,500 license fee for Unity will also be waiving its $1,500 license fee for licensed Unity Pro 4 developers to develop on PC and Xbox One. Now, something about the Unity engine, I don't know if our listeners know much about it, but if you ever look at Kickstarter games, I would say like 50% of them are using the Unity engine, like Wasteland 2, for example, is using Unity. Shadowrun Returns is using Unity. Unity right now is the major hot development platform. And we know that Microsoft for a long while was doing XNA, and I don't think that'll stop. But I think they've realized that Unity is the new hotness right now.
Yeah. I think the big thing is, you know, making it free if you're published through Microsoft, because that's been the big chafing point with things like the new Oddworld game not coming to Xbox Live Arcade. Microsoft insisted that, hey, you either have a development house or you publish through Microsoft Games, or it doesn't go on the platform. Making it more attractive for Microsoft to pick things up would go a long way for small developers.
Well, yeah, the thing is that, you know, Microsoft is doing the hard sell, and it works for the most part, because one thing that indie developers, when they do get published by Microsoft, like Fez or Limbo or State of Decay, you know, Microsoft backs their games like nothing else, you know? That's why even though Epic and Electronic Arts publish Gears of War, they're having multi-platform titles for it, because Microsoft pays for all the advertising. And if you know how much advertising costs in this industry, you know, if you have someone else advertising your game for you, you know, I mean, it's basically a way, because EA probably thought, well, you know what, we could probably get, you know, something like Mass Effect. We don't really need Microsoft's marketing for it. We can do it ourselves. You know, something like that basically markets itself. But Gears of War has always had Microsoft's marketing. And where I'm getting with this is that Microsoft, if Microsoft decides, you know what, rather than forcing you to come with us, we're just going to make it a lot more attractive and a lot more cost effective to go with us. You know, you can publish by yourself, but if you publish with us, we'll pay for your stuff.
Well, and the other part of this that we kind of glossed over is removing the monetary requirement for additional patches to games.
Right. Now, for those who don't know, the first patch that you do for a game, and it has to be at least 30 days or 90 days after, is free. After that, you have to pay, I think it was $15,000 to patch your game again.
Yeah, which is seems crazy to me.
It's you know, publishers, major publishers don't care. You know, they'll say, okay, fine, whatever. But indie publishers, they have a problem with that.
Absolutely, they would have a problem with that. And, well, even major publishers, it's a $15,000 expense that they shouldn't have to pay. And if, you know, you have some decent game, maybe there's a patch that's required, you know, years down the road to make a DLC work or something like that. I'm glad to see Microsoft get rid of that fee. I had no idea they were charging developers fees to patch their game.
However, I do like them enforcing a time in which you can patch, because one of the major problems you don't want is people patching it every other day. Oh, by the way, we have to patch it. If they retain, you can only patch at 30 days or 90 days and then certain intervals after that. I'm fine with that, because, you know, sometimes you got to give some structure to these people. You know, like, listen, you know, you can't patch it every day. You can't keep on, because what happens is that if you allow that, and there's a major complaint about gamers, you know, day one patch, you know, and stuff like that. And
well, if you release a game that is buggy to the point of being unplayable, Assassin's Creed, you ought to be penalized for that. So I have no problem with them charging a $15,000 fee if a developer screws up to a point where a patch is required in order for somebody to play the game. So, you know, that's one side of it. But if somebody wants to make a game better, let's look at the Orange Box, for example. Yeah. Team Fortress 2 has never been patched on the Xbox. And that game is, I forget how old it is now, but it's damn old.
2007, I think it is. 2007.
The PC version has been patched so many times, it's not even funny.
Oh, that's Valve's own product, though. I mean, it is Valve's own product. You know, and by the way, they have Steam. They have the Steam toolbox, so they don't even patch their own games anywhere, I don't think. Right. No, but I'm just saying, you know what? I mean, there has to be some sort of structure and some sort of limitation. You don't want somebody patching something 15 times in a week. I know that's extreme, but I'm just saying, you know, so if you say you can only patch it at 30 days and 90 days and then a certain interval after that, I'm pretty sure people will be fine with that. You know, like, take a breath, make sure that this patch that you're going to do, you know, and I don't really have a problem with Microsoft certification either. You know, I mean, it's good that someone's saying, listen, your game isn't cutting the mustard. Come on, make it better.
I don't think game certification ever really meant anything. I mean, Nintendo had their little gold seal of quality, which was pointless.
Well, in Microsoft's thing, I don't think they're adding any gold seal on it. I just think they're like checking to make sure it isn't, you know, horribly completely broken. Yeah. You know,
well,
I mean,
well, there are some games that make you wonder about that.
I mean, it's basically the USDA stamping something, you know.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I think it's also a useful tool, another way of saying gold, because have you ever seen developers say, hey, guess what? We're undergoing certification. And that usually gets people excited because it means it's almost there.
Getting close. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, the next item, Jordan will now question Valve's ability to count.
Half-Life 3 rumors squashed by Surgeon Simulator 2013 dev. This comes to us from GameSpot. An Easter egg in indie developer Bosa Studios' wacky surgery game Surgeon Simulator 2013 got gamers all hot and bothered, thinking it was a tease for Half-Life 3. The egg was found in the Team Fortress 2 update to the game, a note taped to an object which said in Korean, "The time is." Dots seem to refer to planets within the solar system. Gamers jumped on this as a reference to the original Half-Life, with the first words spoken in it, "The time is 8:47 a.m. by the feminine loudspeaker voice. Bossa Studios put an end to the speculation on Twitter, stating, "Whoa, it seems that you've got a little ahead of yourselves. Here's a clue. This has nothing to do with any Valve games. Carry on now." The previous rumor about Half-Life 3 involved Steambox, and that turned out to be a hoax, it seems.
Yeah. Is Half-Life 3 ever coming out? I know you have that favorite comment about Valve, you know, about
they
their...
They can't count to three. Yep.
Yeah.
What happened to Steambox, by the way? Wasn't...
Yeah, I mean, it was a no-show at E3. Everybody expected Valve to break it out there, and it never appeared.
It never appeared. So I don't know what the deal is with Steambox.
I think Steambox is more likely to be at CES next year, CES January 2014. I mean, it's the sort of thing in which I don't think it's more video games more than it is something more akin to DVR. Not DVR, but, you know, it's sort of like one of those convenience things.
It's a PC that connects to your television.
Yeah, basically. And, you know, the thing is that I'm beginning to think that the console, that there will be no consoles beyond the ninth generation. I've actually started thinking that because I'm starting to think that what we're heading to are PC console hybrids, much like the Commodore 64 and the Atari 8-bit computers.
That's entirely possible. I mean, you look at the computing power on an Android box, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see that happening.
Well, that's the other thing is, have you noticed how many people are jumping on that Android console wagon?
Quite a few. I mean, you know, the NVIDIA Shield.
I was about to mention. That's the one I was trying to figure out, you know, like last, I think it was two episodes ago. Like, I was trying to think of, there's the Udu and the, and I forgot it. And yes. Yeah,
Ouya, Udu, who do you think you're fooling with?
The Universe. They call their game machine part of the Universe.
But yeah, the Nvidia Shield, which apparently has just been delayed. They got a price cut and a delay, so they went down from $349 to $299, and then announced, "Oh yeah, that whole shipping date thing. Yeah, we're gonna push that back." Apparently, they're having some sort of manufacturing problem.
Oh, big surprise there. I mean, didn't Ouya have the same issues?
Well, yeah, I have the same issues too, but I think a different part. You know, it's not controller related. I think it's something related to the innards of the shield.
Let me correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't NVIDIA's Android thing just a giant controller?
It's a controller with a built-in screen. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, something I suspect is maybe NVIDIA stuck one of their graphics card in the thing and just have a minor processor, and boom, there you go.
Yeah, it looks impressive. I want to get hands-on with it before I, you know, can say anything more than that. But it does look impressive.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, have you seen Surgeon Simulator 2013?
I have not. No.
Okay. So basically, in that game, you're controlling a hand, and the ASDF buttons control the each one of your fingers. The spacebar controls your thumb. You use your mouse to rotate that hand. If it sounds
it's like Quap, only with knives.
Except if you think it's incredibly difficult to control, you're right. And basically, how you perform surgery is this: you clumsily pick up a hammer, you smash the rib cage, you throw the rib cage away, you take the lungs, you throw the lungs away. And you change the hearts, and boom, your surgery is done. You just have to do it without too much blood being lost.
I told you about Quap a couple of podcasts ago. Did you get a chance to play Quap?
No, I did not.
Okay, you need to sit down and play Quap.
Well, you need to go and watch a YouTube video, Surgeon Simulator 2013.
I will totally look up the YouTube videos, Surgeon Simulator 2013.
It's a notch above that baby game. That
I want to see your high game. Score on Quap. Q-W-O-P. It's real easy to remember because it's the four keys at each corner of your keyboard.
Yeah.
Q-W-O-P, Quap.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next item. Star Citizen asset costs for ships anywhere from $35,000 to $150,000. And this comes to us from Joystick. It's probably a good thing that Star Citizen is the most crowdfunded project ever with over $10 million, considering the development costs to build these gorgeous starships are at least $35,000 each. All that modeling and application of realistic functions take huge chunks of time, especially for the mega-huge ships' designs. Polygon counts will dwarf what AAA titles use for vehicles. Whereas 30,000 polygons make up a vehicle in top-notch games today, Cloud Imperium Games is injecting about 300,000 polygons per ship they make. Wing Commander creator Chris Roberts said it can be anywhere from $35,000 to $150,000. The prize tag covers a small fighter with everything functioning realistically, including animated dashboard displays with internal and external moving parts. Larger carrier class ships like the Bengal class, a kilometer long, explode upward in asset development and can reach up to highs of $150,000. 7 million polygons make up the detail of the largest creations. Star Citizen will release on PC in 2014. I know last week you were confused about Star Citizen.
I don't follow PC gaming, so I was vaguely aware of it.
But
I didn't know it was called Star Citizen.
I knew a fan it was of the Wing Commander games?
I knew it was the new game from the guy who did Wing Commander, but I didn't know what it was called.
Well, weren't you a fan of space combat games?
Not really, no.
I am.
And Alan pipes it in from the background there. So, It's amazing that these virtual spaceships cost more than a car, for the most part. And some of them cost more than a luxury car.
I think if he's serious about them costing $150,000, that somewhere along the line he's forgotten how to do procedural rendering.
Well, I mean, they're taking a lot of details. I mean, they're taking the long route here, not the fast route.
Yeah.
I mean, but it just – I don't know. I mean, doesn't matter to us because – I mean, well, not us, the Imperial.
We're not paying $150,000 to
play
it.
No, we're paying $20 to play it, you know. At least that's the minimum Kickstarter thing to get a game was with, if I remember correctly.
I can't imagine a 3D model costing anywhere near that amount of money. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, the thing I'm wondering about is what kind of computer do you need to render all of a 7 million polygon construct, you know?
Without procedural rendering, apparently.
Well, here's the thing is that now I'm pretty sure that, well, we're talking about the original, but in practical gameplay, I'm pretty sure some people are going to be playing at lower resolutions and all those polygons are going to be shrunk down to, you know, thousandfold, you know?
Yep.
I mean, this ship has 300,000 polygons, but I'm just using 10,000 of them. Thank you very much. Or less. Because this game is supposed to have, you know, massive space battles. So somehow I don't think you're going to have fully rendered 300,000 polygon ships on many people's computers, about 20 of them on the screen, firing at each other, moving at fast speed, while this 7 million polygon object in the background is wandering around. I mean, I think
that's probably correct, yes.
I mean, I don't know how close you can get. You're going to be able to get to these ships to, well... The thing is, he talked about it being rendered internally as well. I'm wondering if you can walk around these ships.
I don't know.
So, I just know, you know, if you're spending that many per ship, I don't care if you could have saved money by doing it procedurally, but and there's a lot of loving care going on in there.
The one thing that I wonder too is that you've been around the same as I have with racing games, right?
Yeah.
And they say that, you know, a racing game, the car has X number of polygons. You never see it in game because you're looking at a windshield with a steering wheel.
Unless you do
right?
a third thing in which you're over the car, you know.
You only see it in the replay.
Well,
and
no.
that could be what's going on here too.
No, well, you know what? When I play Forza, I never play from inside the windshield. I play from the close. You can see the entire car, but not far away. You know, that third person view. Same thing with the Need for Speed games. You know, I just can't play from inside the windshield. I just can't. It's not something I'm able to do.
Yeah.
Then again, I don't drive any cars whatsoever in real life, so maybe that's why.
That could be why. Yeah. I drive cars in real life, and I prefer playing from the cockpit view.
Yeah. Also, I've never shelled out. I haven't had a steering wheel since my ColecoVision days. That's the last time I had a steering wheel was with the ColecoVision.
Yeah, one of my buddies always bought the steering wheel, and so I would try it. I didn't like it. I much preferred the controller.
For the ColecoVision or just generally?
In general.
Oh, okay. I mean, you know, this is getting way off topic, but they haven't made a decent joystick in a long while. Not, you know, I think the Atari 2600 joystick was the perfect joystick.
The Suncom Track 2.
Okay.
Best joystick ever. Sorry, TAC 2. TAC 2.
Was that one of those cheap Apple II shits?
Nope. It was a solid joystick
with a nice ball on top and a steel shaft. You could not break that joystick. I still have a pair of them from the Commodore 64 days that still work today.
Yes, the 8-pin port days? I think it was 8-pin.
Nine pin port days. Five on top and four on the bottom.
Right. I mean, anybody can plug in anything with those things, from your Commodore 64 to the Atari 2600 or whatever.
To the Amiga, yep.
And the ColecoVision, too,
The TAC-2 was an awesome, awesome, awesome joystick. Best joystick ever. Steel shaft, steel plate on the top. You could not break them, which meant that nobody ever had to buy more
Two. I remember those joysticks, actually. Not that particular brand, but the ones, those boutique joysticks that were tough as nails and, you know.
Well, you know, they do as a boutique item, the fighting sticks, right? You can still get fighting sticks from time to time.
Yeah, I have a fighting stick from Hori, and, you know, it doesn't – what I really want for my joystick is that I want it to snap back to center immediately. I don't want it to stay left, right, or no. I want it to be a chore to move the joystick, not too much, but enough that, you know, it's – you know, you get it, but it has to – recoil back to center really fast.
So you want a solid self-centering joystick?
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's my biggest problem with the Xbox 360 controller. You know, with the analog stick when I'm trying to play.
Pushy.
But you know, moving.
So you're saying you prefer sticks that are firm?
Oh, stop it! By the way, have you handled the Xbox One gamepad yet?
No, I have not. I've not seen a gamepad for the Xbox One or PS4 in person.
Oh, those things are getting rave reviews. I mean, they moved, you know, the shoulder buttons. You know, they slightly moved them so that it's even easier to use now, and it's just ergonomically perfect.
Nice.
There's nothing new on the Xbox One controller save for the Kinect lights and. There's no touchpad on the Xbox One controller, is there?
No, there isn't. I thought there was a share button, though.
Yeah, there's also a Mini Kinect in it, which it can look at you, and that's about it.
I didn't know it had a.
Yeah, it can look at you.
It has a camera on it.
Your Xbox One controller will know it's you. Spooky. It'll know it's you.
That's kind of creepy, actually. I don't.
I said it was creepy.
I don't want my controller recognizing me. Thank you.
Well, your Xbox One will definitely. I mean, I didn't think it was creepy that, you know, it'll be able to read your heartbeat. You know, the Kinect from a short distance, it'll be able to read your heartbeat and your the way your facial flushes. I mean, that's basically a lie detector, isn't it?
Well, that and it's not going to work right now because my house is 98 degrees.
I could just see it now, though. It's like, are you using a modded Xbox? No. I can see that you're lying. Disconnect.
My thing is that when I see that you saw the news that they were saying that it's going to detect your heartbeat, my initial reaction is bullshit. It's going to detect your heartbeat.
No, it does.
And
I
think that's where it's going to sit. Is that? It's going to be one of those things that they talk about that is
it does.
either A doesn't work or B is never used.
It
one
does
of the two.
Work though, Jordan, because it worked with me and it worked with other people getting in front of it at E3. So I can confirm right now it works. The only thing is, what would it be useful aside from, well, it, you know that all those workout programs are going to work. Use it for. As a matter of fact, one of the biggest things people use Kinect for is their exercise programs. You know, Zumba and all that stuff. The thing is,
what I saw at the store yesterday that surprised the hell out of me. It was a Kinect title that I did not know existed. It was a self defense trainer for the Xbox Kinect.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I'm very tempted to go back and pick it up because Toys R Us has a 90% off clearance sale. So I think it would probably be like $4 or something if I were to pick it up.
But, you know, we could have the same conversation that we did about the stupid finger sensor that Nintendo said they were going to use. The second time, again, it didn't happen. You know, they said they were going to use it for the Nintendo 64. It didn't happen. They said they were going to use it for the Wii. It didn't happen. Now they're saying they use it for the Wii U. It didn't happen. But
I didn't know they had that for the Nintendo 64 originally. I remember them announcing it for the Wii U, and everyone was like, what's the point?
They've been... They recycled all their old stuff. You know, they're trying to resurrect the Game Boy, the Virtual Boy, you know?
They need to bring back Rob the Robot.
I have my Rob the Robot.
It's only a matter of time. Bring back Rob the Robot. Bring back the Game Glove.
Anyway, the thing that I was thinking about is that if, you know, the same discussion about the Nintendo sensor that we could ask about the Xbox One sensor is, how would you incorporate it into a game? And the always thing I always think about is a horror game, you know?
A horror game, or, you know, for senior citizens, the help I can't get up app.
But imagine if a game would detect...
Xbox, help! I've fallen and I can't get up!
Ooh,
would
you
like to
imagine,
call 911? Yes, please!
How about this, Jordan? How about Shadow of the Eternals utilizing something like that to detect your heartbeat and screwing with you with the game, you know, as only Shadow of the Eternals or Eternal Darkness could do, you know?
That would be fun. I could see something like Metal Gear Solid using it as well as, you know, some sort of stealth component to Metal Gear Solid.
Speaking of which, you know what happened at the precursor games, a.k.a. Silicon Knights, right? One of their founders was arrested for child pornography, owning child pornography.
I heard about that. That was very surprising.
Well, all I can say is if there is one Snakebit developer out there, that's them. I don't think you'll ever see Shadow of the Eternals or any game coming out from Silicon Knights ever again.
I think that's a safe bet. You know, hopefully, you know, worst case scenario is Eternal Darkness, the property gets bought by somebody who can do something with it.
Well, like THQ sold all those properties. And anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Take it away, Jordan.
Listener feedback from Hair Alien. Almost missed this episode. At Microsoft's decision to reverse its online policies, don't know about it. I think it's a bit too late. Just like it commented to a YouTuber, similar hardware, smaller price. I think PS4 is better placed. And due to using similar hardware, I expect the game libraries to be similar. If you ask me, it'll be the price and the exclusives that will make the difference.
I think Microsoft is hoping that it's the exclusives that make the difference, because so far they've been snatching up all of them.
Well, not necessarily, because the rumor now is that Titanfall is just slipping to the PS4.
That's always the rumor. I mean,
on the Xbox. Yeah. At EA, Soderlund states next-gen consoles should have come a year earlier. Idiot. I love that. I'm just tempted to stop there. hardware takes time and resources to develop. It's not like you can set up a day-one patch for a piece of hardware. Oops. The CPU bus should have been 256 bits wide. Well, no worries. We'll ship a day-one motherboard replacement.
But wait a minute. Now, the thing is that what's the typical console cycle? 5 years, you know, being a main thing. So this console cycle went, what, 8 years?
8 years.
So...
And there were motherboard replacements on both the PS3 and Xbox. So,
we did have a new console. It was just the same console.
Generally, about a year afterwards, you'll see a hardware revision with a new motherboard. So, but yeah, it does take about a year.
Yeah.
At Fish claims Fez 2 won't come to Xbox One due to anti-indie policy. Not so sure about it being fit. I think that Team Meat was also a bit angry at the new console. So... thing is, while something to be praised, making such a stand can cause them some financial grief. I mean, the devs built some communities on the platforms they released their games on. Switching the platform could mean a smaller community, possibly a smaller market.
Bayonetta. Well, it's not an indie game, but I can't imagine Bayonetta will sell more than 5,000 copies on the Wii U.
I have no idea how many Bayonetta 2 has sold.
Released yet. I just mean... you saw that list of sales on the Wii U. I mean, even for a poor selling, I've never seen games that sold that badly on something that not named the Gizmodo or something, you know, or the Gizmon. I mean, major titles from third party and first party developers not selling more than 10,000 units worldwide.
The Lego Undercover City game to me looks to be the system seller for the Wii U, and it's just
20,000, isn't it?
Yeah, 20,000, something like that.
Yeah.
If I were to buy a Wii U, it would be because of that game.
If I don't buy
that game and I don't buy a Wii U, it'll come out on one of my platforms anyway.
I'll wait for the same price that I bought the Dreamcast at, $50.
Wow, Bayonetta 2 is not scheduled for release until 2014.
Which is odd because they had a working copy there, so I...
Yeah, I've seen the working copies around. I wonder what
you know what that might mean, though. Okay, if it's coming out in 2014, you know what that means, right? It's going multi-platform, because that's exactly what happened to Rayman Legends. Remember, Rayman Legends was supposed to be a Wii U exclusive. Then they decided we're going to delay it until the holidays, so we can get the Xbox 360 and PS3 versions to launch at the same time as it. So I think that's sort of like a semi-confirmation that Bayonetta 2 is going multi-platform. And we'll hear that mention in the next 2 months, which I'd be ecstatic for because I loved Bayonetta, and I'm not going to buy a Wii U just to play Bayonetta 2.
Well, and if it's going to be 2014, you might as well put it on the PS4 and Xbox One.
I don't think so. I think it would be still be an Xbox 360 PlayStation 3 game.
Well, it'd be easier to port from the Wii U to those platforms, that's for sure.
Well, the entire point would be to get more sales, and I don't care how popular PS4 or the Xbox One may or may not be, there are not going to be as many of those as there's going to be 360s and PS3s.
Yeah, you're not going to compete with 140 million machines.
Yeah. Okay, next article. Next reader from Arthur V at Better Late Than Never. It's never late to have a new generation of consoles. If it came a year earlier, it would most likely have been more expensive or less refined. Still, I can barely wait for the PS4. The Microsoft Swing did nothing to change my mind. I still will be getting a PS4. Probably will import it because of the atrocious Europe and UK price markups. I know there are taxes involved, but we have to pay as much in pounds as you in dollars. Well, the thing is that, you know, if you were never going to buy an Xbox One, why would Microsoft changing its mind influence you to buy an Xbox One? You know, at Premium Games. At the beginning of the previous generation here in the UK, games cost almost £60. And now, Jordan, wouldn't that be $100?
That'd be close to $100, yeah.
But it quickly fell to £40, which was the price of premium games the last generation. No one in the UK is going to pay more than £40 for a game, especially now that consoles are region free. And thank God for that. And like I said, and I was probably as shocked as you were that Microsoft would make the Xbox One region free. Although now that I think about it, that was one of the major points that Sony brought up about the PS4 was that it was going to be region-free. So Microsoft said, you know what? If they're going to do it, screw it. You know, being region-locked never really helped us.
And region locks never made any lick of sense anyway. I mean, I understand multinational licensing is tricky, but come on. That's what it
does. I mean, CDs are not region-locked. I mean, if I buy a CD in England, I know it's going to work on my U.S. Since I'm still using it, yeah. And the thing is that also the other thing I think that's a major point of it is digital. And now you don't even have the disc to have PAL or NTSC anymore on.
Well, that's true. And the other thing with the region locks, though, is that, you know, the store itself is region locked, right? If you don't have a Japanese account, you can't get something from the Japanese store and vice versa. So they're locking it at that level. They're not locking the software.
Yeah, now all you have to do is DVDs and video cassettes and get rid of NTSC PAL there too. That's never going to happen though.
I thought NTSC and PAL is pretty much moot at this point with high def, right?
Yeah.
Is 1080p.
You know, they were showing off 4K TVs at PepCom, and I said, well, it's going to be worthless because they're already developing 8K TVs.
Well, and the thing with the 4K TVs is that currently they're like between $10,000 and $15,000. So, going to be a while.
At Betrayal, I agree with Alien. I know that Microsoft won't turn back on their new promises, as it would be a financial suicide, but I hear a lot of people saying they don't trust the Xbox anymore and won't buy the Xbox Bone. I think Microsoft shot itself in the foot pretty bad. That and the price. Here in the UK, the price differential is pretty bad. £429 to £349. Okay, I did that wrong. £429 to £349. It'll make a lot of difference here in the UK. That's the same difference. That's still $100 US difference. At Star Wars Battlefield, Battlefront was a blatant ripoff of Battlefield. No, it was not. It was actually a mod on Battlefield. Okay, so it's not a ripoff, it's a mod. And now seeing DICE have development is quite strange. I'm just glad the game is being developed by someone. I love the first two games, and The Lord of the Rings Conquest Atrocity, which came out some years ago, was a poor representation of the series. There's something fishy about the Microsoft East Indie Trading Company. That's really weird.
I have no idea what that even means.
I quite enjoy indie games on the Xbox 360. Recently played White Noise, a multiplayer ripoff of Slender, which cost as much as a can of Coke and gave me more fun than most premium games. He's talking about the indie games, the Xbox Live indie games, not the Xbox Live Arcade. I would love to see greater support for indie games in the next generation. A note on Fish Rant: if Microsoft policies are so anti-indie, then how did those thousands of games make it to the indie channel? Okay, here's the thing. The indie channel, the Xbox Live indie channel, is not regulated like the Xbox Live Arcade thing. What people want is Xbox Live Arcade, because there you can sell from $5 and up. On the indie channel, it's $1 to $5. You can't have achievements either. So that's the main difference. Indie channel is basically where if you're not a publisher and you just want to, you know, put your test the waters out on a game, then you can publish it there. And all you have to do is rate it yourself, sex, violence, and all that stuff. But there are a lot of very good indie games out there that are just a buck. I know that Zeboid is still releasing their games on the indie channel, including Penny Arcade Adventures 3 and 4, and also Cthulhu Saves the World. And they have another game, and I forgot the name of it. But if you want some good stuff on the indie channel, those are good choices. Also, I Made a Game with Zombies is also a nice, another good choice. It's a $1 game done by the same guy who does stuff like Shank. It's basically a twin-stick shooter that's 13 minutes but has a great song. So, I mean, the indie channel has a lot of great stuff. Oh, and yes, you do also have that childbirth game in which you're trying to shoot for distance.
That just kills me. There are YouTube videos with the childbirth game with, you know, 6,000 meters. It's crazy.
Yeah. And also you have non-games there too, like games that just make your Xbox controller vibrate for a specific purpose. Let's just say that's the main reason people bought Rez for the Dreamcast. There was one reason people one reason that a lot of people bought Rez for the Dreamcast, and it was for the vibrating controller.
Yes, the Trance Vibrator.
At being impressed. None really. I mean, games are good, but none of them are struck me as particularly amazing. Okay, this is answer to the Xbox Live, our question of the week, which is the same question. What game at E3 impressed you the most? He said, none really. I mean, the games are good, but none of them really struck me as particularly amazing. Probably because I tend not to watch much trailers and just wait for the games. If I was to choose one, then I enjoyed the Battlefield 4 gameplay. Looking forward to bringing down skyscrapers and reducing maps to rubble. And 64-player console battles, the game itself looked just like Battlefield 3, though. At losing a game disc on a territory in your own bedroom. I think the problem is not that Alpha Protocol disc was easy to lose because it's tangible, but because you're a scatterbrain, a digital copy won't fix that. Oh, yes, it will, because Steam is right there, and all I have to do is click install. So this contest is going for another week. So if you want to try and win a Titanfall T-shirt, large size, let us know what game at E3 impressed you the most. So, you know what? We can actually add some more games to that. Was there anything that we discussed that we didn't discuss last week that struck you? Actually, you know what? You never really went into... I know you didn't really go into Sunset... Oh, damn it.
Sunset Overdrive.
Yeah, you never really discussed that at length.
Sunset Overdrive looks hilarious to me. I don't know that I would be able to play it, but it's, you know, kind of looks like a cross between Team Fortress 2 and Jet Grind Radio with a little bit of Borderlands.
It's the first game being developed by Insomniac solely for a Microsoft console. And for those who don't know who Insomniac are, they basically did the Ratchet and Clank games. They also did – what else did they – there was another major –
They did Infamous on the I believe it was Infamous on the PlayStation 3.
Right. So they know their multiplayer. The only problem with the Ratchet and Clank games is that while a lot of people make a big fuss over them, they don't really sell well, you know?
Yeah, they haven't sold well in ages, and they're really not very good games.
Well, the multiplayer is
I know that's, good. That's blasphemy to people who the PlayStation 2 was their very first console ever, but the Ratchet and Clank games, the Jak and Daxter games really pretty much sucked.
Weren't those attempts to have the mascot much like Crash Bandicoot?
It was an attempt at a Crash Bandicoot type game, and I just get puzzled whenever somebody gets excited for those titles because it's like they've never played any other games in their entire lives.
You know, Sunset Overdrive remind me a lot of Gotham City Imposters, which is a criminally overlooked game, and especially since it's free to play.
I could see that as well. Yes.
Yeah. The other game that I played there was Need for Speed Rivals, which is basically Need for Speed Most Wanted, but upping the police car and the and racer aspect, and also making use of the cloud systems on both the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4. So what happens is that you could actually enter someone else's game, you know, without any transition. Yes, you can turn that off, so you don't have annoying people popping in that you don't want to pop in when you're enjoying it by yourself. You know, But I really enjoyed it because one thing that, surprisingly, Need for Speed Most Wanted didn't have enough cops and robbers for me in that game, you know? I want my police car slash, you know, I want my action in that. That's what I did most Need for Speed, not Underworld, was it? No, Undercover. Need for Speed Undercover was the thing that I did most was deliberately get into police chases to see how long I could stay in a police chase without, you know, getting busted. You know, that was my favorite part of Need for Speed Undercover.
I never got into the whole Need for Speed games. It just, I'm not a fan of driving games in general.
Well, the thing is that these games are more like Burnout than they are, say, Forza, you know?
Yeah. The one that I thought looked interesting as far as racing games go was a PS4 title called The Crew, which looked like Fast and the Furious, the video game. You get a team of people together to do heists in your cars.
Wasn't that Drive? No, Drive Club is something different.
Drive Club was similar but different. But yeah, The Crew is all about, you know, doing heists.
Isn't The Crew
through
multi-platform?
Cars. I don't know.
It's Ubisoft. It's Ubisoft.
They had it during the PS4 conference and I think the Ubisoft conference both. But that one, The Crew looks interesting.
I believe it is multi-platform. So it's Drive Club and Gran Turismo 6 that are Sony exclusive. Oh, God. I'm sorry. I mean, a lot of people have attacked me for this, and you saw it on GameStooge. But I do not understand the appeal of Gran Turismo. I do not. It is boring. It is boring as sin.
I'm in the same boat with that. I have Gran Turismo 3 and 4 or 4 and 5, something like that. And the problem is that when you first start playing the game, every car steers like a boat. And I don't want to have to spend time getting a car that doesn't suck. Give me something to race. Let me race. If I have to spend time upgrading the tires and upgrading everything to get a car that's actually drivable, you, I've got better games to play.
Now, I don't want to sound like a Microsoft fanboy when I say this, but that's why Forza is so good, because it allows you your level of detail. If you just want to have an arcade racer, fine. They say, fine, you can do that. If you want to be one of those guys who tinkers with everything, you can do that too. It's up to you. And, you know, when you give the gamer the choice, it's always a good thing.
You know? That's the one of the reasons that I like the Project Gotham games so much. You get in your car and you drive. And, you know, the cars actually feel different. You don't have to do anything to them.
Well, didn't Turn 10 develop those games?
No, it was Bizarre Creations.
Right. They did the Burnout games. Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. No, what am I thinking? They did Project Gotham Racing. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm thinking Gotham, of Manhattan. The Dreamcast game was Manhattan thing. Manhattan? No, San Francisco. What was the name of the game on Dreamcast?
Metropolis Street Racing,
right. Anyways, so that was the question of the week. I lost myself here. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news, with our gaming history article. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast, or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send us your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at gamestuge.com, which you can also read Jordan's review of The Last of Us, if you hadn't already. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. Yeah, so you're getting a lot of flack, predictably, over your The Last of Us review.
I love the guy who said that I obviously didn't play the game.
When you said that you played specifically, you played through to the end of the game. Yes. So.
Well, and I had, you know, it's the whole picture, it didn't happen thing. So I put up a picture showing the 100% completed.
yeah. So anyways, see you next week. And we'll be giving away the t-shirt next week.
Woohoo! Someone gets a shirt. Yay!